Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this very day back in 1962 that Brian Epstein signed with the Beatles as their manager. What changes did Epstein make to the band? Was it A, he started making the band members wear leather jackets? Was it B, he started making the band members wear crew cuts? Was it C, he started making the band members bow to the audience? Or was it D, he started making their backup singers wear poodle skirts? A 1962 Beatles adjustment? What was that anyway? And question number two, it was on this day back in 1999 that the National Transportation Safety Board concluded what about singer John Denver's 1997 death? Was it A, he had been drinking alcohol while driving? Was it B, he ran out of fuel and flipped over? Was it C, he swerved to avoid hitting an animal? Or was it D, his multitasking diverted his attention from his piloting of his speedboat? John Denver's death. What led to that anyway? And the answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of January 24th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1858, that Mendelssohn's Wedding March was presented for the very first time as the daughter of Queen Victoria married the Crown Prince of Prussia. Wedding March, 1858, today. And it was 23 years ago today, 2002, that the Broadway show Les Mis played for the 6,138th time to become the second longest running show in Broadway history. Cats closed in 2000 with a record of 7,485 shows, and Les Mis becomes number two in 2002 today. B.B. King's The Thrill Is Gone introduces our blues music news. This is from AARP, the magazine, December 2024, January 2025 issue. Memphis, Tennessee. Why go? To celebrate a king of the blues. In 2025, this American music mecca is staging a celebration for a musical king. September 16 will mark the 100th anniversary of B.B. King's birth. Head to the famous Beale Street, where B.B. King's Blues Club will celebrate on September 18th with a musical tribute featuring members of King's band. When King arrived from Mississippi in 1946, Beale Street was the vibrant hub of Memphis' black cultural scene. He quickly landed a radio DJ gig as the Beale Street Blues Boy, later shortened to just B.B., and built a fan base playing the guitar in local clubs. These days, tourists swarm Beale Street, including the Rum Boogie Cafe and King's namesake Blues Club. Memphis also became a number of music sites to visit in homage to King. You can see Sun Studio, where he recorded, as did Elvis Presley, Johnny Cash, and Jerry Lee Lewis. And check out the Memphis Rock and Soul Museum and the Stax Museum of American Soul Music. But perhaps the best way to celebrate is by diving into the city's still thriving music scene. One must-visit spot is the outdoor Overton Park Shell, built as a Works Progress Administration project in 1936. The amphitheater hosted Elvis's historic debut performance in 1954. He opened for Slim Whitman and offers free concerts every year from May through October and a backstage museum experience year-round. To escape the tourist, head to Bar DKDC. The locals say it stands for Don't Know, Don't Care. It's my favorite spot for cool live music. It gets not just local artists, but touring artists that don't mind playing tiny spaces, says Cole Early, Overton Park Shell's content and archives manager, and a Memphis music enthusiast and self-described music fanatic. It's a well-kept secret. Many Memphians have no clue about it. Early raves, too, about Crosstown's little-known Memphis Listening Lab, a music library with a collection of 35,000 45 RPM singles, 15,000 LPs, and 25,000 CDs. Guests can visit the lab sound room, make a selection, and relax in a comfy chair. It's the ultimate place for vinyl and music nerds, Early says. B.B. King.
From both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow, it's cloud illusions I recall. I really don't know clouds.
Joni Mitchell's Both Sides Now introduces our music research. She couldn't walk, she couldn't talk. Music therapy helped Joni Mitchell recover from a stroke. Could it ward off depression and dementia too? This is written by David Sheria Tamadari in TheGuardian.com, 18 January 2025. When his friend, the legendary songwriter, had a catastrophic stroke, neuroscientist Daniel Levitin put together a program of music therapy. Now he's recommending it for a whole range of conditions. In 2015, Joni Mitchell suffered a catastrophic stroke. According to her friend, the musician and neuroscientist Daniel Levitin, when she got back from the hospital, she couldn't walk and she couldn't talk. And the doctors were so pessimistic about her recovery, they had not scheduled any follow-ups. For a while, it looked as though one of the most gifted songwriters of the 20th century would be permanently silenced. One day, though, the nurses caring for her at her home found Levitin's number on a piece of paper in the kitchen, and they called him. They had noticed that Mitchell perked up when she heard music coming from her phones and wondered if he had any suggestions for songs she might respond to. Remarkably, he'd helped her compile a CD of her favorite tracks for a series of albums called Artist's Choice back in the early 2000s. It was a short-lived project from Starbucks, which had bought a record label in order to pipe music into its coffee shops. Their picks range from Debussy to Marvin Gaye and Leonard Cohen. Here was the perfect solution, then a tailor-made music therapy program. The personalized aspect is something that Levitin, whose new book is called Music as Medicine, knows to be all important. As he explains to me from his home office in Los Angeles, if you're talking about therapeutic effects, you have to like the music. If you don't like it, your walls are going to come up. Your cortisol levels will spike. You'll say, get me away from this. As luck would have it, Mitchell had set down exactly what she'd need in these circumstances while she was well, and Levitin knew precisely where the nurses could find it, in the corner of the bookcase at the far end of her living room.
I really don't know life. I really don't know life at all.
Levitin sent some extra material because he understood how getting in touch with a sense of herself would speed things along. Herbie Hancock's River, the Joni Letters, and Our House, the song Graham Nash had written for and about her, with its opening lines, I'll light the fire. You place the flowers in the vase that you bought today. Mitchell made steady progress with the help of speech and physical therapist, but Levitin sees music as a crucial part of the picture. One of the things we know is that music you like increases dopamine, and dopamine is the neurochemical that motivates you to do things. Having that music as a reminder of who she is, who she was, and what she cares about helped her to do the very difficult job of recovery and to follow through with the protocols of the therapist. In a touching anecdote from the book, Levitin describes how a year after Mitchell's stroke, he brought flowers on one of his regular visits. She walked over to a cabinet by herself to get a vase for them, he writes. She moved some vases out of the way to find a particular one in the back, a glass vase with a single handle and flowers painted on it. That's a beautiful vase. Where did you get it? I asked. I bought it when I was living in Laurel Canyon with Graham Nash. Oh, that vase. It is a story that captures a key theme of the book, that music is a golden thread in the fabric of identity, and something of Levitin himself. At 67, he's too young to be an original hippie. Mitchell is 81, but was certainly shaped by the counterculture. Born in San Francisco at the end of the 50s, he began his musical education in 1969 when he bought a stereo with money he'd earned weeding gardens, and he played Cream, the Rolling Stones, and Chicago in his bedroom. The real epiphany came when his father insisted he get headphones. From then on, the music was suddenly coming from inside my head. Later on, he dropped out of college to be in a local band, and when that fell apart, worked as a studio engineer and producer for the likes of Carlos Santana and Blue Oyster Cult. A fascination with the mechanics of musical perception led him to enroll part-time at Stanford University to study neuropsychology, which eventually became his day job. In 2006, he published This Is Your Brain on Music, a mix of the technical and personal that became a runaway bestseller and was translated into 18 languages. It covered the gamut of musical theory, from rhythm, harmony, and pitch. Our musical preferences are defined by what we hear up to the age of 18. Music as Medicine marks a return to his core subject. When I wrote This Is Your Brain on Music, I wanted to have at least a chapter on medical benefits of music, but there really wasn't any good science about it. So I couldn't write about it until now, because there's actually been some good work, he tells me. We're learning enough about the underlying mechanisms of music and brain and body that we can apply them, not just in the lab, but in clinics and hospitals and care facilities and outpatient treatments. Levitin writes about music helping treat people with Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, PTSD, depression, flesh wounds, and back pain. But does it add up to more than just playing something nice to take your mind off of things? Well, the best evidence we have for effectiveness comes from Parkinson's disease, where you've got individuals who have difficulty walking because of impairments in the motor system. And in part, it's that in order to walk smoothly, you need to have some kind of an internal timer that helps you put one foot after the other. If you play music at the same tempo as their natural walking pace, then they're able to walk. That's welcome news to those familiar with the sputtering and freezing that characterize the disease. And remarkably, after having received this kind of therapy for a few weeks, they can walk even without music because they can hear it in their heads. The article skips down. So is music a bit like a workout for the brain? Yeah, it engages every part of the brain that we know of. It invokes memory, emotion, reward systems, eye-hand coordination, planning. There's a lot going on there. And even if you're not a professional musician or particularly good at it, you get all the benefits. That's why Levitin recommends, prescribes, playing music, whatever your ability or age. The article skips down and ends with this. When we're depressed, we can't really put into words the way we're feeling because words are just too small or too precise. And music, because of its ambiguity and its lack of precision, can capture that feeling better. It is the language of emotion. You realize you're no longer sitting at the edge of the cliff, staring into the abyss by yourself. There's this other person here with you. And they've been through this, and they've expressed it in this beautiful work of art. Joni Mitchell fans are, of course, already familiar with the concept. Sometimes blue really is the warmest color.
I don't want a lot for Christmas. There is just one thing I need. I don't care. My wish come true. All I want for Christmas is you.
Mariah Carey introduces our rock and pop music news. How much does Mariah Carey make from All I Want for Christmas Is You each year? Hint, it's in the millions. The Queen of Christmas released her Yuletide classic in 1994 and has been making millions from it since. This is published in People magazine by Rebecca Eisen, December 21, 2024. When Mariah Carey released her 1994 song, All I Want for Christmas Is You, she didn't know she would be cementing her status as the Queen of Christmas for the next 30 years. Upon its release, the hit earned Carey $60 million in royalties, per Forbes, and has only appreciated in value since, adding millions to the singer's wealth every year. Its success has spawned countless covers by iconic artists, from Ariana Grande to Michael Bublé, and has permeated pop culture through movies like Love Actually. On this past December 13, All I Want for Christmas Is You became the first holiday song to reach 2 billion streams on Spotify. So how much does the pop star make from All I Want for Christmas Is You every year? Here's everything to know about the song that contributes to a large portion of her net worth. When the song was first released in 1994, Carey made $60 million. Now, according to Forbes, Carey earns around $2.5 million in annual royalties based on calculations from The Economist. The outlet reported that the New York Post estimated the number to be even higher at $3 million per year. While Carey has yet to beat Bing Crosby's White Christmas, the highest-selling single of all time with 50 million copies sold worldwide, the Christmas tune is well on its way. At least on Spotify, Carey's classic has been the number one song globally on Christmas Day every year since 2016. According to a January 18, 2025 article in Idolator by Kelsey Barish, the 60s and 70s were great decades for music, but after all the fame, how did the musicians fare with their fortunes? Here are the net worths of some of the biggest musicians from the 60s and 70s. Bob Dylan has a net worth of $500 million, as does Mick Jagger, $500 million. Diana Ross comes in at $250 million. She, of course, from the Supremes. Paul McCartney, $1.2 billion. Art Garfunkel, $95 million. Keith Richards, $500 million. Debbie Harry from Blondie, $30 million. Barry Gibb of the Bee Gees, $140 million. David Gilmour of Pink Floyd, $180 million. Don Henley of the Eagles, $250 million. Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, $100 million. John Fogerty of Creedence Clearwater Revival, $110 million. Gene Simmons of Kiss, $400 million. Ozzy Osbourne, Black Sabbath, $220 million. Steven Tyler, Aerosmith, $150 million. Stevie Nicks of Fleetwood Mac, $120 million. And Elton John at $650 million net worth. So goodbye, Yellow Brick Road. The title of that article, by the way, is Elton John's Salary Finally Revealed, The Net Worths of 1960s and 1970s Musicians is Surprising. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day back in 1962 that Brian Epstein signed with the Beatles as their manager. What changes did Epstein make to the band? Was it A, he started making the band members wear leather jackets? Was it B, he started making the band members wear crew cuts? Was it C, he started making the band members bow to the audience? Or was it D, he started making their backup singers wear poodle skirts. As noted on thisday.com, Brian Epstein signed with the Beatles as their manager on this day back in 62 and began to direct their image away from leather jackets. He led them toward a smarter stage presentation with matching suits and bows to the audience. So answer C, therefore, is the correct answer. And the answer to our second question, it was on this day back in 1999 that the National Transportation Safety Board concluded what about singer John Denver's 1997 death? Was it A, he had been drinking alcohol while driving? Was it B, he ran out of fuel and flipped over? Was it C, he swerved to avoid hitting an animal? Or was it D, his multitasking diverted his attention from his piloting of a speedboat? Correct answer? Answer B. As noted in OnThisDay.com, it was today, back in 1999, that the National Transportation Safety Board concluded that John Denver died in a 1997 airplane crash because he took off with too little fuel in one tank, had trouble switching to his backup tank, and inadvertently put his plane into a roll while his attention was diverted. So, let's bid adieu to John Denver with his cover of Leaving on a Jet Plane.
All my bags are packed, ready to go. I'm standing here outside your door. I hate to wake you up to say goodbye.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time.
Every place I go, I'll think of you. Every song I sing, I'll sing for you. When I come back, I'll bring your wedding ring. So.